All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Work Group 1 under the Information Blocking Task Force. Quick roll call. We have Andy Truscott, Cheryl Turney, John Kansky, and Cynthia Fisher. Do we have Michael? I believe Michael is joining us as soon as possible. Denny McComb? Okay. Not yet. First thing of the order is to revisit outstanding issues from our prior call, so I'll turn it over to Andy to get us started.
Thanks ever so much. Hey, everybody. So we decided that the agenda item for today's call is going to be focused upon price transparency. So I wanted to just touch upon just a quick bit of background about where we're at in terms of where we've have price in the work we've been doing before we crack on with actually getting down our thoughts. So where we have right now is inside the definition of electronic health information, we have a statement around price for any past, previous, or sorry, past, current, or future healthcare services, which is focused upon the individual. So it's the price of an individual's prior, current, or future care. We have a request for comment about effectively asking how we would seek to address price transparency inside the regulations. And we've got guidance from Mark, the ONC Oracle, that we can, if we wish, recommend some regulations around price transparency or seeking to enable price transparency if we see fit, and we can make any kind of other suggestion to ONC on how they could address price transparency issues, but also tasks which we might want them to undertake. In the current drafting around our response on the request for comment, we both acknowledge that we profoundly believe this is an important topic which needs to be addressed. We also suggest that given the legislative authority that ONC does have with HITACH, a additional task force should be created which begins work immediately outside of the information blocking work specifically that's going on and outside of the regulations which are going on right now to actually frame up a more holistic ONC type response. And that's currently in the drafting that we have. However, we do have the opportunity to give some more direct recommendations, and the purpose of this call is for us to start with that contextual background I've just given around the information blocking slant on price, and also the recommendation we're making around instantiating a task force. With that as background, what else do we want to say? And that's the purpose of this call.
Andy, I just want to jump in real quick and say, the recommendation to create a separate task force, totally, you guys can make that recommendation. But as far as timing for getting things into the final rule, I think you really should focus on, like, if there are recommendations or proposals you want included in our considerations for this go-round with this rule going from proposed to final, I would recommend that you focus on getting them through this work group and not wait on another task force.
Don't misconstrue the point. The purpose of this call is to get down right now those into the recommendations, etc. Given the timeline that we are working to and given the complexity of price transparency and the fundamental shift which we all agree on this call is warranted, into how we handle price, that those changes are going to take longer to think through than we actually have within the whole rule setting timeline we're working to. That doesn't mean it shouldn't happen, and it doesn't mean we shouldn't make recommendations now either. So I'm kind of saying we hear you, but I think there's two approaches here. One is the stuff we want to put in right now, to your point, to get into these regulations, but then also just being, with all sense of jurisprudence, providing more scrutiny than we can do within the timeline we're walking to.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah, this is John. I just wanted to echo what Andy said, and I heard you just agree with it, which is extremely helpful. I just wanted to add that as a task force member, there's times when I feel like I understand and can recognize and advise ONC on the way to implement a regulation and possible unintended consequences, et cetera, and there's times that I'm concerned that I'm creating them myself. And so one of the things that I think ONC wants to have that additional care taken consistent with this approach that we're recommending.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, this is Cynthia, and I just, you know, I think we can deliver a lot on this task force to not really delay the game. And if there's a nuance after that we need to, you know, delve into further, you know, I'm happy to volunteer to work to do that on behalf of patients and businesses outside of the healthcare system.
And that's awesome. You know, to my mind, Cynthia, if ONC seizes the opportunity to create an additional future task force, then you would be a pivotal point of that. That said, we have the opportunity right now to get some recommendations into ONC. So do you want to, if the floor is yours, Cynthia, do you want to start getting down, getting out there some of your initial thinking on things we should be saying?
I added a couple comments into what you had written, so I'm going to pull it up on my iPad momentarily, but if you want to start, I think just pulling up where we are.
I will ask somebody else to be the auditor then, because I am not online. I'm on phone.
Yeah, I'll share my screen. I'm not volunteering to be the orator necessarily, but I can be the sharer.
I'd like to listen to Cheryl's calming tones.
Oh, that's so nice of you. I also would be willing to take on the work on a task force if that's what's decided. But I do have some input on pricing transparency. I think I brought it forward before, and I was going to send you a document, Andy. Hopefully you'll get it later today. But essentially what we're recommending is that pricing information needs to include data around what services are in and out of network, which is something that Cynthia has spoken to already. But it should also include cost estimates for procedures or services based on some logical groupings of what, you know, typically a patient would need. Because the real dilemma here is that we can, and as insurers, have actually tried to create sort of, you know, bundled services. And let's take a simple one, like going for your annual visit. You know, if you bundle all the things together that could possibly be needed for that, it could be quite expensive. And so not everybody's going to need that. Those services, and some of which for, you know, a woman in her 30s might be, you know, a pregnancy test, an STD test, a mammogram, you know, a whole list of things. So, you know, what we have to do is look at these in sort of some sort of reasonable components to say, you know, if we're going for an office visit and it's an annual visit, this is what it's going to cost. But you also could be asked to perform some additional services because of the care condition. And as a result of that, these additional services might be, you know, the things on the menu that Cynthia mentioned before, you know, the lab work or additional things as a result of the visit. Those are things that are potentially could be anticipated because they might be there and then some may not be. And that's the difficulty with how complex do we make this. If it then extends over to a more complicated procedure like knee surgery, again, some additional things may come into play when they actually, you know, open the person up and find out, okay, well, you know, there's this other thing that we have to deal with that's unanticipated. So I think that's the part that makes cost transparency more difficult. But to speak to the things that would normally occur if there are anesthesiology services and a pathology and a lab test and all of these other things, you know, making the data available to the patient that identifies what their cost would be, what their cost share would be, whether or not that provider that they're going to go to is in network or out of network, making that data available for most carriers today. Now, you know, some of the stories that have been told, I don't know how old they are, but there have been a lot of changes recently based on a number of rules that require a lot of this data to be already shared within cost transparency tools. And that takes care of, you know, sort of the insured population. But then what about the uninsured, which I know is also who Cynthia is speaking to, the how do they see what the cost transparency is? I literally have done for Anthem a survey, and there's no less than about 30 cost transparency websites out there. Most of them are regional. It doesn't cover the entire country, and the variations are pretty wide in terms of what cost transparency tools are available. So having something available, even if it's based on, at this point, CMS rates up, you know, 125% or whatever is average or normal, would at least give people some semblance of, you know, what is the cost if I go here. The problem is that I don't know how each area, and it does seem to be unique to different states because there's different rules, how they price different procedures. So you might find the hospitals in California handle it differently where there is sort of a balanced billing law than Tennessee where there isn't one. And some of the stories that Cynthia's told about people going bankrupt, I know happen a lot in Tennessee, picking that state because my mother used to live there, and there is no balanced billing rule. And essentially when you leave the hospital, if you're an uninsured, you know, you have a giganto bill that you're basically going to be responsible for, and they'll chase you everywhere to get it. But again, I guess my point is, I don't think there's one solution that's going to apply to everyone, because I think the problem is very complex. And yes, we need to quantify it as much as possible and make it realistic and make it accurate. But I think that trying to do that is very difficult because none of the insurers or hospitals are set up like retailers. And maybe that's where they need to go, but to go there is going to take some time. And right now that's not how their systems are set up.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you for your comments. This is Cynthia. I think, you know, a couple of things just to go back on some of the points that you raised is right now the insurers and hospitals and providers have their rate cards. And so they do have the contract negotiated terms digitized and available, and they're adjusted on a continuum. And those could simply be posted and available. And if you think about how we can get to real pricing transparency where we get to see the net price, and consumers can be able to search. You could Google search. You could search through mobile apps. You know, and we could get to that Uberization of healthcare that Seema Verma talks about in her speeches. You know, one of the things that we can see is if the entities post the rate cards, if they post by CPT code, DRG code, line item, or bundle. And it were readily available. I've had a group of people consult technology companies and innovative technology companies in the healthcare system that say, you know, it would take about 3 months to aggregate and readily put up in very consumer digestible format that we could get to a real pricing visibility into the system. So, you know, ultimately, this is doable, having it posted. You have the charge master prices that are up. You have the Medicare rates that are up. And we could actually see real visibility into pricing differences. And, you know, just yesterday we had a case of, you know, person, two separate entities, one stitch each, cyst removal. One bill was outrageously $4,000 for that. And the next bill
very similar type surgery, same person, $21,000. And that's for one stitch, resolvable stitch. And you think, oh my gosh, how do these people handle the egregious differentiations in pricing? If they could see up front their alternative, it would be much, much better. And, you know, what we've experienced from patients that we've heard from is the cost estimators don't work. And, you know, I think we've talked about that on a previous call, that the reality of wherever you're going within your system, you know, a cost estimator could be off. We've seen it off by a factor of 10. You know, the thing is we have the ability to see the real price and know the real price. And if you think, where do we want to go in the future, wouldn't it be apropos that both the physician and the patient get to choose what is within affordable range for the patient? And since the rate card and that even at the point of care, the insurer and the provider communication can be provided ultimately to that patient, that bill should match the pricing quota. And we should be able to say, okay, look, if something's really far and askew, then the patient should have negotiating leverage to say that bill, just like when we go to a restaurant, doesn't match the pricing that was provided.
Okay, so that's helpful too, Cynthia. So I think coming out from that, I heard at least two, maybe three or four distinct recommendations for regulation that should be put into place. I think I heard one that was just at the tail end there, which was basically a price that is quoted can never be exceeded. Is that pretty much what you're saying?
I didn't say never be. I mean, I basically said ideally we would. My point was that if you look at what's in the electronic health record definition, health information definition, it's past, present, and future payment. The patient should be knowledgeable, transparently of the price, and that comprehensive billing. Right now, patients get surprises that might come 7 months later from a procedure that they're billed, you know, or even.
Okay.
It goes to collections of a charge master price. So if it's all digitally available, that whatever is billed, then they have the price and they have the bill comprehensively digitally as well as their clinical information.
Okay, that's my mistake because I thought you said something different. I heard you say that if you're quoted a price, then the price you're billed should never exceed that price. But you're saying you didn't say that. Okay. When I go back and look at what you else were suggesting, which I thought and please keep me on the straight and narrow, I thought I heard you say that having agreed rate cards, what you want to call them, okay, but the agreed rates for procedures should be publicly posted and available from any provider organization. I thought that's what I heard you say, which, okay, that sounds like it's something which we can discreetly make a recommendation around. But then my question would be, when I don't think we have a lever right now in our current drafting to make that happen. We'd have to amend because right now we have past, present and future price information around an individual's care. But what you've described is actually more of the, you know, the agreed charge masters, which an individual's care always tailors off that slightly. It has the same baseline, I agree with you, and it's that baseline that you want to publish. So I think we might would need to make another recommendation around to get that information published because I'm not sure it's called out specifically in the current EHI definition, and I'm not sure that's the right place for it either. It's almost like that there's another definition needed around that kind of financial information and the inner workings of the finances of the health system, which should also be made available and shared. I'll stop there.
I think it's there, past, present, and future payment. I think it is part of that, and I think that's what we've been asked to say, okay, how technologically do you get to that?
And, I get we get to it, but how would that definition of EHI relate to the charge master?
Well, you could show the contract negotiated rates. You can get to that through your CPT codes or your DRGs, bundled and unbundled. And
but that's not not individual. That's across my group.
And you can the rate cards and the insurers have that on even on the individual basis between those and they and the provider. They already digitally have done this for decades.
You know, Cheryl, do you want to wade in here? Because you're much closer to this than any of us because of where you sit professionally.
I think it's as simple as what is being identified, especially in light of the value-based arrangements that have been negotiated. It's not as, I mean, I can't even internally reduce it down to an Excel spreadsheet. So because of the complexity of the way that things are being done. So I can't envision what this rate card's going to look like because, again, if it's a hospital or a provider that's in a value-based arrangement, then, you know, what happens with that rate card in that case? I mean, the problem is because of the way that these
Cynthia, let Cheryl finish, please. Cheryl?
Yeah, I just think it's not as simplistic as is being made out to be because it takes our team and not only us, other payers, I've heard the same, you know, months to program for these things. So if it was something that as simple as a rate sheet, that would not take more than a few days to do. And it takes us months to do these. So I think it's more complicated and there's a lot of variables that all come into the price. And if you're basically paying for healthy outcomes, which is different than procedures, what Cynthia's suggesting would work if it's all fee-for-service, which is the way it used to be. But we're moving away from that. So how do you make a value-based arrangement, which is based on keeping people healthy and based on outcomes in terms of price transparency? It's not that simple. And again, I don't have the 100% answer. I am going to provide some sort of suggestion because I do think we need to have one. Otherwise, we're going to keep saying it's complex and how are we going to go forward. But even the APCDs, and I know I brought this up before, have not known how to deal with value-based arrangements. And so they're basically taking the information and making it look like fee-for-service when it's not. And so it's not even really a valid representation of what's being paid, but it's the only way they know how to do it. So, you know, I don't think, I'm just saying it's not as simple as you're making it, especially in the current environment. And maybe we need to change the environment. Maybe that's what we need to say here. Maybe we don't go to value-based arrangement, but that completely changes what CMS's direction is.
Thanks, Cheryl. Cynthia, go on.
Yeah, although, you know, look at value-based. Right now, who determines the value? There's self-reporting, self-metrics of the provider systems themselves on the value-based metrics and outcomes reporting. When in fact, you know, looking at any other industry or the opportunity that we have at hand with price transparency is that true value-based reporting could be actually provided by the patient and the reality of the patient outcomes and their longitudinal patient record, which will reveal the actual health and well-being of that individual. So, you know, think of the opportunity of how participative and how the metrics can actually be consumer-driven, patient-driven on care as we go to it now, those digital records by patient or already the economics are already worked through and baked through between the contract negotiated terms between the players. So those are digitally available. Those can be deployed and be transparent. And I think this whole shadow of complexity, you know, once we get to pricing transparency, you know, it basically allows what we could do is actually be quite transformative of having players compete on performance. you know, what is, you know, and compete as in a true competitive marketplace on care. And that's where value-based care really will succeed. So, you know, you could call it another term, call it performance, price performance delivery.
Well, okay, so to speak to that point, there are some states that are putting up common risk models that all the payers would need to use. But those are not there yet either. And so right now what you have is you have multiple payers using slightly different risk models that are not all the same, and then basically in these value-based arrangements, so that risk score sort of determines what the payment approach is, if you will, for people that fall within that risk score. So if I envision what Cynthia's model is saying, you could then say, all right, well, here I'm, you know, Johnny B, and my risk score is 94. Who wants to bid on me and take me on as a patient? And but that's great if you're a 94, but what happens if you're a 37? Nobody wants you. So, you know, there's dangers to sort of everything that you're looking at this way. And I think we have to think about all of that as we're creating whatever the goal is here.
I think the goal is to lower the cost of healthcare and to provide transparency and allow that patient to get access and manage their both their health and their wealth. Because it, right now the model is broken, and if you look at where you know, we know it's broken, and it's not been working in light of both the American public, the American worker, and the American businesses and economy. So, you know, speaking, like we talked about, as a self-insured employer, that, you know, you look at the cost, the rising costs of plans, and the rising costs where there is no transparency affects individual wages based upon it. We've seen great wage suppression in this country, and if both the patient and employer can shop based upon price, you could imagine that we could actually flip where people would be in control and able to be in control of their wallets and their savings versus what we see today. There, you know, and so we could get there, whether they're a 34, a 37, or a 94. You know, you can get basically get through transparency the ability to get care and coverage and management and more participatory choices by both patient and even employer downstream.
So I think we've been talking about, there's a couple of different things we've been talking about there. And I'm appreciating all the input here. This is a really, I'm going to call it a ferocious conversation, not because we're being ferocious with each other, but because it's, you know, intellectually, there's a lot of thinking to go in here because it is a complicated system. Okay. Healthcare provision in general is complicated discipline. And the way that we remunerate it here in the US and insure against it is adds another level of complexity. That said, and to Cynthia's point, that model can still be expressed in some way. And it seems like there's a couple of different angles here. One is around making it transparent for the cost of a service. Now, whether that service is going to be remunerated through fee for service or fee for value, etc. But that's one side. But so the cost of a particular service that you receive from a particular provider, if you're paying 100% out of pocket, it's X. If you've got Y payer involved, it's going to be Z copay or whatever. If you've got another payer involved, it's another copay. Another payer involved, it's another copay or whatever. So I think that one of the arguments Cynthia was making was that that particular series of negotiations should be made transparently available to a patient so they can make an informed choice about whether they're going to pay for a particular service out of pocket or when it comes to their annual enrollment and selecting a payer who might be providing them coverage. And so they are, have that better sense of being informed about what their out-of-pocket costs could be over time. I think that's that was one aspect of what you were saying, Cynthia. Is that, am I oversimplifying, or is that kind of in the right ballpark?
From just something simple like the colonoscopy. Like patients should be able to see that, what is their annual routine colonoscopy going to be? And they don't know that they might get $6,000 in surprise billing from a pathologist and the anesthesiologist that weren't revealed to them in, you know, trying to get what is the all-in inclusive price of a colonoscopy and where should you go, which are routine procedures and almost a commodity level, but they're not a commodity because of out-of-network pricing. And then some pay charge for facilities, right? You don't know when that's going to come up in a surprise.
Okay,
if entities posted their prices and they knew that patients knew they were going to get what the out-of-network, that they weren't going to have coverage, then you have that transparency. And I think ultimately what you're going to have is you're going to have systems that it'll be all in for a colonoscopy and they'll do it at another price. And that patient should, in a much lower price.
Okay,
and there'll be no surprises.
I think
the patient, then the patient can go where there's no surprises. Yeah, right?
Okay, I think
and
that
then
was
they
a
don't
yes.
even know, if,
with
like,
one exception.
The last one you find out is, if you can, it can be upcoded if there's a polyp. You can get it upcharged and upcoded as a different type of procedure, and that's a whole other level of charges that's not transparent to the patient today.
Okay, let's get to that because that would be a slightly different service. So I think in principle you agree with the statement. And the point I just want to pick apart is whether your position here is that it's not only to know what your out-of-pocket cost or out-of-network cost would be, but also what the cost could be to you depending on who was running your network, who is your insurer, so that you can make an informed decision about who you want your insurer to be. Is that also included in your premise?
Ideally, you know, a patient should be able to see what, you know, ideally, you know, one could argue and say, why is a small business employer average health plan in Massachusetts $31,000 and many have high deductible of $4,000. Okay, that's just for small business. Now, a medium-sized self-insured business may pay $15,000. That's for a family of four. So they may pay around $15,000 for a family of four. And then a larger business, even less, maybe closer to $11,000, $12,000 for a family of four, $12,000. So why then, one is the health plan coverage is different based upon what size company or business or organization you work for. And that just seems wrong. Secondly, and unfair, the second part of the equation, and there's no visibility into those differences. The second part is oftentimes those plans are less. You pay more, but you get less. And you get a worse negotiating leverage than the larger entities or larger companies or organizations. So you're even as you stand in line for your MRI, one patient may pay five times more than the next. And that difference, if we had price transparency and entities posted their prices, you could see a substantial walking with their shopping with their feet where people would save both on their deductibles and they would save on their out-of-pocket, they save also their companies and their organization. If I could save my company unnecessary tens of thousands of dollars in their health care coverage per family of four, then that bucket of savings could go to increasing those employees' wages per cost of FTE per organization. And so we would change the game to allow for control of costs, both for enterprises and for patients.
Okay, so that's another layer around this as well. I can see where you're coming from. Okay, and it's like we've got this onion we're constructing of different layers of transparency, which actually have an overall transformational
impacts upon the healthcare system. Got it. I'm with you. I'm understanding it. So I think going back to the original question that you were saying, yes, we want to have publicly available differential in rates that will be charged to different plans, because that's going to help drive down those costs you were outlining by making the plans able to more effectively compete against each other in negotiating the rates with the providers in the first place. Got it. Right now, I don't think in the current drafting of the regulation we have the level of, I'll just call it information sharing in quotes right now, or the right definition of information to be shared to enable that. We certainly have the individual services received level, the mandate around the sharing of the prior costs, the current costs, and the future costs. I think the future costs one, as it currently is drafted, might cause some consternation about how you actually contemplate that, because it's specific to the individual in the way it's expressed in the regulation. But honestly, I think simply to enable what you're describing, it's almost behoven on us to have a very appropriately worded, richer definition of price and cost information that must be shared between and publicly posted, or however you want to do it. But it sounds much richer than the simple focus around an individual's care experience that we have right now. I know it's pertinent to it, but the way it's currently structured in the HI just feels quite a thin definition for what we're seeking to achieve. So
well,
have you got any thoughts around that
for
definition?
For provider to payer care, the pricing can be provided, as can the payment information as part of the digital electronic health record, as described both in HIPAA and described in OMC's definitions.
So that, the electronic that health record. For that particular service, we can put the price against that service. Absolutely. Got it. Get that. Yep.
And that the insured rates at the net negotiated rates are digitized and known. And earlier, in the task force, one of the things that I had mentioned is, if the, looking at providers posting their net negotiated rates, what they're willing to take for by CPT code, by DRG, by bundled, unbundled, by value, post
yep.
it publicly, make it all available. There's a wide range today that a provider is able to do and negotiate.
So that feels like that's another step that we're looking at taking to achieve that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a wide range today, but I would argue to say, okay, why should one entity, if you post those ranges, if you post what your different things are by plan and what was negotiated, then you'd have true transparency.
Okay,
and,
so but to,
and,
to make that happen, though.
Responsibility.
Okay, so to make that happen, and let's let John's been very quiet for this call so
mm-hmm.
far, and Cheryl chime in, but to make that happen, to get that level of visibility into the differences in, and deltas we have in price, do we think that we're going to need to make another statement of regulation to
Andy,
say, go on, John.
Yeah, it's and I've been listening intently. A couple of calls ago, I tried and didn't do a particularly good job of making an analogy around regulations as tools. And, screwdrivers are good for driving screws and hammers are good for driving nails. And I don't want to see us try and use the info blocking regulation and stretch it in a way that is not, I think it's well equipped to do. So I think that's what we're in danger of doing. I mean, I violently agree, I believe, with Cynthia's free market perspective on we're not going to fix what's broken with healthcare until we can introduce this price transparency. Contemplating the machinations of using this regulation, which I've said in the past is inherently a blunt instrument, to try and accomplish that, I think we need a different tool for that particular aspect of fixing the healthcare system. I think we need to stick with the definition that we have and focus on liberating the pricing information of the individuals, past, present, and future.
This is Cheryl, but I didn't really follow what you just said. Somehow you confused me.
Go back, John.
Can you just say that again?
Well, shall I try and paraphrase, John? And John, tell me if I'm right or wrong. John's fallen off the reservation. Cheryl, I think what John was trying to get to was saying the information sharing regulations are focused around enabling patient information about patient care to be routinely shared between their care providers and made available to the patient for sharing with whoever they want, and that the power and control should be in the hands of the patient there, and for other lawful purposes, and that might be using a hammer to bang in a screw if we say we also want to enable a lot of the price transparency aspirations that we have through the information blocking regulation. I think that's what John was saying.
I got that part. What I didn't get was the last part of what he was saying.
John, can you fill us in? Mr. Kansky, have you disappeared off the reservation here?
Right. Maybe he's talking on mute.
Yeah.
John.
There he is.
John. Yeah. So as soon as I finished my comment, I meant to hit mute and I hung up.
Could you just repeat the last bit of your comment? We got the hammers on screws. I was actually going to say hammers on bananas, but yeah. But the last bit, Cheryl was just looking for a bit of clarity. She didn't quite follow you.
Let's see. So let me see if I can replay it myself. So it's just that, I think we need to not start down the path that you were suggesting would be necessary, Andy, to broaden or revisit the definition. I think the definition as stated, which is focused on the individual's pricing information as part of electronic health information, I don't feel it's a good idea to open that can for the reasons stated.
All right, that clarifies it for me, because that's the part I wasn't understanding what you were meaning. Okay, thank you.
I also heard, John, and correct me if I'm wrong, just from my notes of what you were saying, is that you also said that you would support liberating the information on pricing at the individual level, past, present, and future. That's what I heard you say at the tail end. Is that correct?
I, in as much as I think that is clearly in the definition of EHI, yes.
Okay, could I just
add something that I brought up in, and thank you, John, in a previous call, was that if we looked at CURES and its definition of the EHI originally, as they looked at health information, it was what would be pertinent to an individual, but it wasn't into the protected definition of HIPAA or the in, I'm trying to, there's two I's and I can't remember the two I's, so forgive me. We spent a lot of hours on information blogging. My point is that if you want to get at the visibility, one would obviously, as a patient, want to know, what is my insurance negotiating in today's world? What is the rate agreed upon between, and as it's broken down, as it's knowledgeably known between the provider and the payer for my care and for my services, that I can have that as an individual level. And in order to make a decision, I'm in a provider system that wants to charge me. My primary care is in a large hospital system that tells me I need a certain blood test, and I can get it for 1/11th of the price that if I go across the hall and get it in their system. Where I get it in their system is as they tell me that they're a quality large hospital system, I get that facilities fee of $275 as well. However,
I could
go down the street. Hang on. If I have full visibility into pricing of that same lab test by code, and I'm able to see that across the spectrum, I can choose to walk with my feet and get it at 11th the cost and see what my copay would be and save both my insurer, if I have an insurer, or if I have a self-insured employer, walking with my feet in that visibility, then I can choose to save the healthcare system and myself.
So I think you're describing the problem, and I'm trying to. So I don't know if this is an appropriate time, Andy or Mark, to are we planning to talk at all about the bullets in the preamble? And I'm not suggesting that we need to, but Cynthia's comments are making me think of some of them because I was reading those and flipping back and forth in my own mind between John the patient and John the health IT guy, and reading them as a patient, it's kind of, well, of course I'd want that. But then thinking about the how, some of them I have no more intelligent feedback than how is that even possible. So for example, some of the pricing information that's asked to be made in advance, which is I think what Cynthia is anticipating, if it's my planned colonoscopy or it's my planned annual physical, then that makes perfect sense. But in reading some of the preamble comments, there was things like emergency visits and visits prior to registration that I couldn't wrap my head around the how we would do that.
Well, look, if you look at like a CABG procedure, right? So you look at coronary artery bypass. It's very common. The thoracic surgeons have done a fantastic job at evaluating accountability in their care, and that has been narrowed to a very routine, even though it's a surgery, it's a well-oiled machine. So that's a great place to say, okay, if you could have total price transparency as to what that procedure would cost at one hospital system versus another. And, you know, why wouldn't you look at those comparative prices? And then you could look at risk, which is narrowed to a very narrow range, and patients could choose based upon performance and value.
And, so I think this is the...
And price, and ultimately price. But that's something that could ultimately come to be priced very, very easily. But in the meantime, just put everything up. We got to start somewhere. Post it up. Make it accessible on the internet. And then when the players want to compete, they can do it even better by surgical procedures. Where why wouldn't the institution at some point in the future take on the risk because they know they can do them so well?
And so I think this is. If I'm,
is it diabetic,
Andy,
or have higher risk, then they take on what is that price range that they'll compete at, and you'll be able to change the game. But until we post prices, we can't go anywhere, and we can stay in this entanglement of just saying it's okay, it's too complex and it's too opaque. But it
so
doesn't
I think
need to
we're
be.
I think we're on the two sides of that dividing line that Andy was trying to describe a few minutes ago. I understand your point. I'm thinking about trying to prevent information blocking about the healthcare of an individual. And I understand, I believe, what you're suggesting is that if all prices of stuff somebody might need are published, then an individual would have access to how much a CABG is at hospital A versus hospital B. That to me is two different things, because the latter is definitely price transparency, but I feel that it's trying to use the info blocking regulation as not the right tool, is my concern.
However, John, and to the group, I would say, you know, information blocking, I mean, if we can't see the prices and we can't know the difference and we're supposed to write a blank check, isn't that information blocking? Isn't that information blocking by both our provider and our payer and anybody who's exchanging our data behind the scene? I mean, is this drastically affecting people's lives to not have this information?
We get the problem. It's blocking a different type of information. Do we as a group want to recommend to ONC that, and potentially we'll drop out the regulation that we think they should have, that there is a different class of information which we also want to ensure is not blocked? And that class of information is the general service cost and service charges that will be made for, we can lock down the scope and what that's going to be, but what's procedures, etc. But we want that information to also be unblocked. Is that the statement this group is making?
Andy, I can't hear you clearly.
Okay, I'll try that again. Sorry. I'm in Canada.
Could try it again and then restate it. That'd be helpful.
No, I'm saying, okay, from what I'm hearing from the group right now is that there's a different class of information that we also want to ensure is not blocked. So we get the class of information that's about the individual, okay? We also want to have a separate class of information unblocked that is specifically around the fees and charges that could be levied against a patient for receiving services. And we want that information, those potential charges, to also be, as Cynthia said, highly public, and I think it's posted on the internet. I think we'll probably want to go one step further and say where it should be posted, and maybe set that and suggest where that could be. But do we as a group want that class of information to be described in a regulation?
So, Andy, let me get my perspective response to that really quick. One is that I think you've done a good job of describing what would be necessary if the answer to your question is yes, meaning that we need to define that as a separate category of information so we don't blow our brains out trying to twist the EHI definition. So agree with the need to separate that out if we're going to agree in the affirmative with what you just asked. Secondly, I'm prepared to philosophically agree with what you just said. What I'm concerned about, because I can't wrap my head around it, is the implications of using this particular regulation to try to accomplish what you're suggesting.
This is the point where we'd like ONC to actually say
the regulation. It's already in the regulation. My understanding is it's part of the healthcare information definition anyway, and we're trying to give patients access to their healthcare information, and ONC has already put it into this regulation.
Well, what's in there right now, Cynthia, is slightly different. What's in there right now is that you will see pricing information for the services you have received, the services you are currently receiving. But then the pricing information that you might receive for a service, that's for a particular service you're going to receive, it would be, I think, a stretch to say that the future price extends to getting the outcome you're looking for with having publicly available service descriptions and pricing posted for anyone to consume. I think that would be a stretch.
I see that you would have pricing information publicly and informed and not be withheld from the patient.
I agree with you on that one.
It's a very important part of the patient's decision. You know, look at the differences in the new drugs and insulin. We talked
about last time. We agree on the need.
And,
we absolutely agree on the need.
It is part of the patient record, the patient health information, to
right. But if you take all the components, I think is what we're trying to say. In the USCDI today, it doesn't really talk about pricing in the future. It talks about payments in the past, so claims and payments, et cetera. So if you take all the parts together, in this rule, it's asking through an RFI to give information about further price transparency. And I think that's where they're looking for how can we do it in the future to get at what you're talking about. But this rule itself, if you look at it in terms of what's defined and shareable in the USCDI, and yes, it's included in the definition of health information, but in USCDI, which is the required data element, it's not there yet. And how we make that available, I think, is what we're talking about, so that we're trying to say what can we do now versus what is planned for the future. And I think the intent behind this, the way I read it, was that the future is talking about what you're getting at right now, but what's currently here is claims today and claims past, and what the RFI is really talking about is what you want to get to in the future, which is, you know, posting rate sheets or whatever it is, but it's the pricing transparency for prospective costs that will come.
Yeah, Cheryl, if you look at the term future in the EHI definition right now, I must confess, I'd sat there and said, well, okay, that's future planned care. It's the stuff I know is going to happen, and so I have transparency on what that's going to cost to me because it's planned. Where, Cynthia, you're coming from, and I think we all agree, we just want to work out the right solution to get what you need, is all around the, to allow me to make informed choices about things I haven't necessarily discussed with a provider yet. You know, the stuff that I don't want to discuss with a provider, I just want to work out where I want to go. And Cheryl's right, USCDI doesn't cater for that right now. And it feels like, you know, if we're going to do this, let's do it properly. And doing it properly is not trying to shoehorn it into something where it doesn't quite fit. You know, the round peg into the square hole. Let's actually define a round hole.
Andy, can I just jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
I know this is going to bug you what I'm going to say, but I mean, I said it before. To Cheryl's point, I just want to be clear about where ONC stands on all of this. You're right, there is a request for information about what the department can do in the future, but there's also a request for comment in here that asks, you know, we say that EHI, the definition clearly has price information included in it, and we're asking what, if you have recommendations on what we can do now as well. So it's both what can we do in this rule right now and what can we do moving forward. And
that
we really are just looking.
That doesn't bug me at all. Given what Cynthia is saying, and if this group passionately believes this is what we need to have come out right, then we should be saying we want to have a additional statement in the regulation that says, and it might be a new definition that we have, something like electronic health administration information or something like that, or health financial information, that says that charge masters will be published publicly, and that there will be an agreement of a common series of rates and definitions of rates that every provider will have to publish. If we agree that, then we should get it into the regulation right now.
Not to throw a wrench in the plan, and again, your recommendations, but just to kind of pull it back to CURES, what CURES says is that information blocking the definition is that it's an interference with the access, exchange, or use of electronic health information. So really, to be covered under that definition, for the information to be covered, you see what I'm saying? It would need to be within that definition.
Okay, then we actually should add another dimension to electronic health information, which is as I just described. And
right.
Or we define it and then say electronic information should include.
That can also be done with the broader definition of electronic health information as not just protected, but as just what's the broader definition in HIPAA of health information. Because then it does cover, and I think to Mark's point is It is in the comment period for pricing as it refers to electronic health information. So having that broader definition actually does affect this ability to see the broader playing field of prices. And
so let's do that
patients
thoughtfully.
Patients are blocked from information on pricing. And
right.
It is solvable and doable. Utilizing electronic health information, but also to make it public in the broader sense.
Have you, Cynthia, have you got a definition of this information type that you can share with us?
No, I think I sent it in an earlier work group on that.
Can you just talk through it, please?
Hang on, I got to find it, okay? I think I submitted it earlier.
And Mark, what I'm thinking right now is that we actually have a third leg to EHI. I'm tempted, just for clarity's sake, that we might want to call it like Electronic Health Administrative Information or something like that, which is EHI.
So, Andy, it's on page, when I printed it out from our work group sessions, it's on page 2.
Yeah, I have no screen access right now either. You'll need to tell me.
So it's the
scrolling through. Yeah.
The first HIPAA definition of health information.
Well, we have that already in the EHI definition.
Well, it's broader, and then it has individually identifiable, then it has protected health. So HIPAA has three levels of health information definition.
Okay, so can you, believe it or not, I don't carry all the definitions
right
of health information. Can you read it out? Because I haven't got a screen.
Yeah. Okay, so if I read it out, the first definition in HIPAA from 96, promulgated 2000, it says, health information means any information, including genetic information, whether oral or recorded, in any form or medium that, one, is created or received by a healthcare provider, health plan, public health authority, employer, life insurer, school or university or healthcare clearinghouse, and two, relates to past, present or future physical or mental health or condition of an individual, the provision of healthcare to an individual, or the past, present or future payment for the provision of healthcare to an individual.
Okay, so how would that achieve what you're looking for, which is a visibility into, generic service cost.
Which has nothing to do with a specific individual until that specific individual gets any of those services is the point.
Yeah.
Not really, because you'd have that as a rate card. You'd have it as the plan, and you'd have it by what is pre-agreed upon between the insurer and the provider, based on CPT code or DRG and bundled or unbundled, right? So you already have that defined.
Was what you were reading the individually identifiable health information definition?
No, I was reading the one above that.
And what's it called? If it's not PHI and it's not IIHI, what is it?
I think it's health information.
Health information definition.
Okay.
And health information is what was referred to in Cures Act of patients needing access to their health information.
So a couple of things, Cynthia. Isn't that largely synonymous with Part 2 of the EHI definition inside the proposed regulation?
But the EHI definition right now, it was narrowed more to the individually identifiable and protected health identifiable HIPAA definition.
Well, that's the first part. But the second part of it is not the HIPAA protected definition. It's the individually identifiable data for current, past, present, and future care provision and past, present, and future payments pertaining to that care provision. But that's largely academic, because if I'm reading right in the vision that you have, I'm not sure that to get that, broad publishing of rate and transparency between provider organizations of the charges they would levy for services, that it feels like that's an overread of the HIPAA definition and, frankly, the one that's in EHI that's trying to say, well, because Andy might receive an infinite, in fact, any service, the only services he's unlikely to receive are ones that are to do with gender-specific conditions, but he might receive anything. Therefore, we need to tell him what the cost of anything could be.
They can publish
that feels burdensome.
But you know what? You go to a grocery store, and there are lots of prices. How many items are in a grocery store?
Oh, yeah, no. There's a finite limit. But it feels like that's not relevant because I want to achieve what you're looking to achieve. I'm here fighting with you.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm just saying if you publish it and it's posted and it's out there, it can be aggregated by what the prices are.
Cynthia, right. That's right. But the cost of a colonoscopy for Andy is different to the cost of a colonoscopy for John, is different from the cost of a colonoscopy for Cynthia. What makes it more relevant is that the cost of a colonoscopy without the specific individual context is X. And between providers, it's going to be X, Y, or Z between three providers. And that's, I think, what you're trying to achieve. So you know that cost, the total cost for a colonoscopy is never going to exceed $100. Now, for Andy, it might cost $75. For John, it might cost $71. And the individuality statements, which are in these definitions, actually don't help achieve the transparency you're looking for. At least that's my read of it.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Andy, and this is where I think this is the part of what should be there as a RFI recommendation for the future, because I read it the same way. I don't see that's there today, but certainly if that's what Cynthia's looking for, that can be a recommendation for a future rule.
Well, actually, we can make the recommendation in here. In our comments right now, we can say we think you need to include this as a separate information classification that is shared and must not be blocked. We can absolutely do that, to Mark's point.
Andy, can I get in queue?
You're next. Go.
Okay.
If you've got your hand up, I can't see it because I'm not online.
I don't. So I want to make what I think is an actual good point, which is unusual for me. But one of the concerns that supports I think your argument on this one is that I don't want to throw the regulatory baby out with the bathwater, meaning I thought as a person working in this industry that when we're writing an information blocking regulation, that the things that we are trying to prevent are the things like Seema Verma talks about when she tells the story of her husband having an out-of-state episode of healthcare and not being able to get his healthcare information from that episode in a very frustrating way. And so there's information blocking that occurs in the industry. I still think it's not an epidemic, but there are information blocking scenarios we want to prevent with this regulation. And I think there's a danger of trying to accomplish other important things that need to be accomplished in the industry with the regulation that was set out to attack these fairly specific examples of information blocking. And before I give up the stage here, I'm going to cite the example of HIPAA, which set out as its primary goal to administratively simplify healthcare. And by the time they tacked a privacy regulation on the administrative simplification requirements, it was like putting a 600-pound tail on a 30-pound dog.
Wow.
John, I totally agree with you. And the other thing that we have here is there is the broader definition of health information in HIPAA, which was the first one that I read, not the protected level, which has been sort of egregiously misused. As you all know, why we're here today, is because the misuse of HIPAA as protectionism from having patients leave a hospital system because we know they stay within it because they can't get access to their records. And we live in a transient world. We manage our lives in mobile, and somebody has a skiing accident in Colorado. They need access to their information, and they also need access to pricing. And I think the real issue here is this is change. It's huge, and it's transformative. And it's uncomfortable for many of the owners, and it is change. But the thing that we have this opportunity is it is in the rule to have pricing be included because it's a very important part of the patient's delivery of care and choices of delivery of care and affordability within their family lives. We have patients today that we have telling us that they make different food decisions on feeding the rest of their family when they have another child that has cancer and is putting them in financial duress. So it affects the entire family's health. It's domino. So my point, I'm sorry, I digress because
this is all
these cases firsthand. So yeah. I think the thing is we have the opportunity for transparency and we have the opportunity to utilize the tool. And I think what HHS is doing here is utilizing the tool of real penalties and fines for players that don't want to show prices and want to keep withholding it and keep the complexity and keep the opacity baked into the system. And so I know you talk about using a hammer versus on a screw or whatever, but the reality is that the information blocking compliance tool has teeth. And we can get there because we can have everyone be accountable to compete for that patient by providing the best performance at the lowest possible price.
Okay,
and the only way we can get there and transform the system is to have these types of tools in place.
Okay, so to make that happen, because do you agree with my point that you could read the future price definition inside to be future price in the context of that patient? And it might be less than helpful if we try to force the principle we're trying to get through here around price transparency into that tighter or apparently tighter definition. Do you agree with that?
I have a hard time interpreting your English sometimes, Andy, but this is where I think you can have the individual information provided based upon what their today's insurance coverage at plan. They have their summary benefit plan. They have the digital tracing of copay, out of pocket, deductible. All that is baked into a digital back and forth between providers.
Just listen to the I'll use a use case, okay, because I think we need to explain this, really get this out on the table. If Andy needs a colonoscopy, okay, and Andy knows it's going to cost him $100 from the regular provider he goes to, okay, and says, well, actually, I want to go and get it cheaper. So I'll go to provider B. Provider B doesn't have any of the contextualization of Andy to be able to come back and say, a colonoscopy is going to cost you $80 with us. And they don't know any of that. But I don't think that's what you want. I think what you're asking for is that provider A and provider B will both publish what their baseline cost is for the colonoscopy, and then I can make a choice about which one I want to go to. I think that's what you're looking for, right?
Well, it'd be price. The terminology would be price. What is the price of your colonoscopy? And, you know, if you have out-of-network anesthesia, out-of-network path,
But the current drafting doesn't enable that. The current drafting enables Andy to know what his prices are for the currently planned care he wants to receive. It doesn't give him the wherewithal necessarily to be able to make those decisions about the care which he isn't planning on receiving yet. That nobody who's quoting the price on it is going to have the contextualization to define it. For what you're looking to achieve, and in fact, you went back to the original HIPAA HI definition, I must admit, I'm kind of tempted. I'm not a big fan of relying upon HIPAA because I think HIPAA as a concept is imbued with a lot of different kind of prejudices around it. But I'm kind of with you that adding another leg into the EHI definition, notwithstanding the fact I'd like to call it something else inside that definition, but we can cross that bridge when we come to it, but actually saying that providers will, that there's a EHI includes price, baseline price information for a suite of common procedures to be defined by ONC, that makes sense to me. And that would enable exactly what you want.
Andy, just a point to note. In the definition of EHI, we do talk about, you know, the relationship to the individual. So
yep.
I've heard you talk about Chargemaster or different different prices and just, you know, a potential conflict.
That's the point we've been making, that the individualization nature in the current definition isn't actually something that's going to necessarily achieve the price transparency goals, which Cynthia was so articulately got out there. And that's why, you know, potentially we're looking for this extra leg of definition in there, which is moving away from the individual and looking at the generic.
Okay, great. And just like as far as of clarity for ONC, it would be really helpful if you take that route to, you know, clearly identify as much as possible what you would constitute this new category that you're talking about. You know, what's in, what's out.
No, we would. Well, I think Cynthia already has lots of thoughts on that.
I think there's another way, too, to attack it, Andy, is that in order for the individual to interpret, so you have what the individual may be covered or not covered, right? Because if it's public, you know, we have people that have coverage and they say they make a deal. We know people that make a deal because they were so outrageously overcharged that they'll go and they'll say, I'll pay cash. I'll pay cash all in. What do you can charge me all in for a vaginal birth? Literally. We have people say, I'm not going to go through insurance and I just need to know what the real price is going to be because I got surprise bills. And then they get a real price and they'll say it's worth it to me to pay cash because I'm going to save more money doing that than I am going through my plan with the surprise billing. So, I mean, if patients have the option to see, you know, one could argue for the individual, if the entities post and put easily accessible, readily accessible, their various prices, they can do it as they can just by that code and quantification, then you could see the range and the patient could choose. So I think
Cynthia, we're on the same page.
That would pertain to the individual.
Well, yes and no, because you're going to need to get the correct context for me as an individual to whoever I'm asking to quote on so that they know for person A, yes, to quote on a vaginal birth is appropriate. But for Andy Truscott, to quote on a vaginal birth is not appropriate because it's not a service I would ever physiologically require.
Andy, and you can be an expert on the cost of vaginal births as they go around the country, right? And who's doing what, right? So think about getting it to the place where anybody could search through a search engine on pricing.
I know, that's what I'm trying to help you with, okay? I'm trying to help you get there because as soon as you have the individual contextualization in there, then there's a whole bunch of uniqueness to you as a person that's going to make that a lot harder. Now, when it comes to the risk model side of it and what your likely bill is going to be, which will be less than the one that's put out there as a generic cost, I get that completely, okay? And I think there is that individual contextualization. But as a first step, having the rack rate for services and a provider organization seems to be that first step. The second step is, as you described, Andy being able to make all my clinical disposition available to a set of tools, yet to be instantiated, but a set of tools, which can take my context and then say, right, based upon the risks that you possess and the way that we would appraise your clinical situation against the possible care services you'll be looking for. This is what the likely rates are for you across different organisations. I'm with you entirely, but that's step two. The first step is actually making the information available to start basing those prices. Did you follow that, or did my English get in the way?
Followed that.
Okay. The point I'm making is that the if we try and get the individual prospective pricing piece done inside that EHI definition right now, I think we're missing a step. And I know that you are fully aware of companies who can help generate these models pretty quickly, but they're going to depend upon a number of things. And a provider it's not feasible. And hey, and this is something I definitely don't want to happen, which is people behind the exemptions to stop this kind of information being shared. Because let's say I have a provider organization in a reasonable-sized metropolitan area, and they have a potential population of, let's say, 500,000 people. And those 500,000 people, 10% of them are doing their shopping for health insurance and want to understand what their potential fees would be if they came and received care at that provider organization. And their individual context is being used to define what those likely fees are going to be for that individual. That it could be unfeasible for the organization to actually be providing that information in a timely manner. Because there's so much thinking to go, there's so much contextualization for the individual. What is more feasible is to say, okay, for these 150 popular services, this is what our rack rate is for them. And this is the rack rate that we charge Blue Cross Blue Shield for. And this is the rack rate we charge Aetna for. And this is the rack rate that we charge United for. And I thought that that was the initial insights you were looking for.
Yes, and yes. So the point is, you could have both, could you not? Only also have what it is to the individual with their current plan, and secondly, you could also have it posted that you get to see, as you say, rack rate or the negotiated rate across the system. You know, so that a patient, can say, look, my self-insured company, somehow our TPA negotiated 11 times Medicare rate for a blood test, that if I saw that I could go across the street for $20 versus $700 out of pocket, and $200, $10 versus $3,300 plus my $700, why would Blue Cross Blue Shield have negotiated such a high rate with a major hospital system? And why wouldn't I have
right.
full-time ability
you are absolutely price? Right. You're absolutely right. And that's entirely based
upon
the negotiation.
So if every one of our 1,600 employees has that type of experience, that's like hundreds of thousands of dollars we could put toward employee wages by savings.
Hey, Cynthia, you're right. And to make that happen, that's not about my clinical disposition. That's about the financial negotiation that's taken place between my insurer and my company and the network that insurer's got available for me, okay? And that transparency, which I'm glad you're saying that, because I think that's the same, we're on the same page here. And that's not to do with my individual clinical disposition, that's to do with the context of who my plan is and the provider I'm seeking care for. And that information, I think would be wise of us to define that discreetly and what we want to have happen to that information. If we're going down this line, which it sounds like you want to.
Yeah, and so I think it can be offered, I guess I was looking at the HIPAA definition of health information, that you could offer it both ways. You could get the individual and you could get the broader context, because in order to understand future payments, the individual needs to see their options and choices.
You're right, and I think there's going to be a whole industry created around, let's just call them, payment predictors okay, that's going to take Andy's clinical context, which they've got at because Andy consents to it, and because information blocking is not permitted from any provider, so they will have my entire clinical disposition, and they will look at the plan that I'm on, and they'll look at the providers that I'm seeking to obtain care from, and those pricing predicting companies will actually say, based upon these three things, which are all independent, we believe that this is likely to be your likely payment profile over the next few years. Okay, I think if we obligated a provider or a payer to do that, I can see them coming back and saying this is overly burdensome, and so articulately made that case at the beginning of this call. So I can well see why it's going to be independent companies who are going to bring those three threads of information together. And what's the burden on us is right now with the regulation is to ensure that those three classes of information are available for that those decisions to be made. Does that make sense?
Yes, and if a hospital system or provider or insurance system wants to aggregate it and put it together, they can. They can do it.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So I think what we're looking at is really enabling our healthcare system that is so broken today to work. So no matter where we go as a country politically, with two sets of ideas on health plans, it doesn't matter because what we can deliver now is the way to drive down costs across the system, and it can expose the surprise billing. I would predict that surprise billing would go away because you're going to have to present it, right? So even all those crazy facility fees and surprise billing, you're going to end up seeing ways of having that dissipate to be competitive. So I think it cures a lot of the ills that we have in today's system, and it allows entities to still play in the playing field and on performance and delivery to the consumer and the employer and wherever, and the government, quite frankly, because the government pays a large part of our health care.
So I think we're on the same page here. Go on, other members, if you want to say something.
So listen, based on the example that you just walked through, who that helps is small employers and employer groups decide who they're going to go with in terms of insurers, like, A versus B versus C. But that does not help an individual because most individuals, unless they're uninsured, have already participated in a plan. So their knowledge of, my price compared to Aetna, or they don't care. That's something that they've pretty much shown based on their lack of using any of these APCD cost comparison websites where they can look at that information. What they want to see and what they come to us for is, tell me what I'm going to have to pay. Tell me the costs and the options I have in my local area. So I do think that this is solving a different problem.
Cheryl, with all due respect, consumers don't really know about those tools. It's not really presented to them in a way that they can find them easily. And even today, I don't even go into my portal because it takes me 45 minutes to try to get through all the password systems. And even when I try to reset, I struggle. So, the reality is that this catapults to deliver on what ONC has asked us to put in the rulemaking. And, I think we're challenged with finding out among ourselves ways that we can make it happen. And yes, it is disruptive. It is disruptive. But patients do have, the reality is patients do have high deductibles today. They do have copays. They do care. They just don't know how. And
okay.
The capacity and the complexity has kept us all sheep long enough.
Got it. John, you trying to jump in?
I think I might have
sorry.
Me. Yeah, this is Mark. I guess what I'm hearing, and I think it was a great conversation, but I think where Andy was trying to go, Cynthia, is these are all really good points, but like how do you see it being implemented or recommended in the rule, and what can ONC put in the rule to make those recommendations? Because we what we're asking for is more specifics on how we get there. and whether, you know, and what vehicle we use, I guess.
So Mark, just where I was trying to go, there's a couple of places. One is, and I think we got there, was an agreement that the current drafting of EHI probably doesn't include the type, the class and the utility of data that we are hoping for to be unblocked, okay? The second part of that was, following up on your point, we can't define a completely new class of data. We have to include it inside the EHI definition. I'm hoping that we can carve it out so it's clearly a subset of EHI that would cover that kind of data. And I sort of talked through a use case on the utility could be put to. I must confess, I'm not sure that the current regulations are going to be the place where we define the how and the what. But I suspect that the recommendation that there's a new task force to define the what, and frankly, that's going to define exactly, for want of a better word, the marketplace for information that Cynthia is describing to enable that transparency. I think that's going to be a very fast follower to these regulations. It's my current thinking.
I was going to say, and just to be clear, I'm not saying you need to do one or the other or whatever. You know, the recommendations are yours. I guess what I was just trying to do is kind of reframe what we said in the rule about what kind of information we'd be interested in hearing about.
We're trying to meet that need as well. And frankly, what we don't want to do is derail the information blocking regulation by twisting it off in another direction, which we can get to in a more efficient route as well. But we do need to put in place, because I think it's the right place to do it, the unblocking these types of information so that we can achieve what's absolutely needed in this country.
Yeah, and Andy, I think you said it well before, is, if we enter the electronic health information, and again, I go to a more broader definition within health information as HIPAA defined, but if we looked at having access to the pricing information, one could argue that to the individual would relate to what their payer and provider contract negotiated terms are, and to see what their pricing alternatives are by having, for the individual, alternatives visible through transparency. And to Mark's point, you can get there by posting it through the digital way it's relayed between entities today. CPT code, DRG, bundled, unbundled, the value plan, basically as contractually today, post it. And Andy, you had earlier said, you can do it by each and every plan. You could do it by cash. And if an entity says, look, this is the net negotiated price, this is the price I'll accept for this service, and have it comprehensively posted, they could post it in that format. They have options. But the real issue is, if the individual is going to see it, then it has to be unblocked. So what we're asking for unblocked is to see prices across the system, however they're negotiated, post
that. Yep, and also the basis for that negotiation. Because there are different types of bundles containing different, you keep mentioning CPT codes. Absolutely, CPT codes are useful. But there's also a finer grain behind that as well, of other ways of referring to data. And, DRGs do vary in definition. But that's all detail. Right now, we want to make sure that the regulations have got are mandating that information will be shareable. Correct?
Will be shareable. Will be. I'm just trying to be English. It will be shareable.
Yeah. I'll parse it into American in drafting. John, have you got anything at this juncture?
I do not.
Okay, so what I'd like to do is open up public comment at this point, because this is a very complicated issue. I think it's very simple to describe what the problem is. It's fairly complex to work out how we're going to address it. It needlessly, but we are faced with the system we're faced with. So can we open to public comment, please? Operator, Lauren, anybody?
Operator, can we open the line?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Thank you. Lauren, some calls I can ask the operator, and some calls I need you to interject.
Understood. Okay. And do we have anyone in the comments in the queue at this time?
We have not at this time.
Okay.
So, Cynthia, do you have any proposed drafting that defines these information types that we could look at to start getting into our EHI definition?
I have the HIPAA definition that I sent, but I can get back to you with that. I have to find it and dig.
I think so. Yeah. I think maybe look at the HIPAA definition with a bit more fresher eye, especially with the conversation we've had today.
And Andy, this is John. If I understand where you're trying to navigate in terms of specifically identifying this different class of information, I don't think going back to the HIPAA definition of health information is, I'm not sure that's the right direction to head. I'm just saying that, yeah. That if I didn't know about HIPAA and the definitions, and I was going to try and describe this class of information, it would be characteristically pricing information not associated with the individual, but associated with fill in the blank, with terms that you don't want an HIE guy trying to articulate.
I suspect that Cynthia is going to go back and look at the HIPAA definition with that lens, given the conversation we've had today as well.
Yep, I'll butt out.
Yes. No, it's okay. You're equal part of this task force, dude.
I'm the HIE guy. This isn't really my area.
You're a patient, if nothing else.
I am.
So, Cheryl, is this making sense to you?
It makes sense to me. And, I mean, I don't necessarily object to it, even though that keeps being subscribed to me. I'm just trying to look at all sides. And I do think that, you know, the people that are going to comment on this are going to be all the consultants and those that are currently involved in the sales process of large groups today, because it essentially blows up their business model. But again, that's not my concern because I'm not in that business. I'm really trying to look at it from, you know, all the other perspectives, but, you know, that needs to at least be acknowledged. But I do want to focus on what's important for the individual, and I do believe that the individual wants something that's, you know, simpler, that they can make decisions around. And I'm not sure, quite honestly, that Chartmaster rate sheet is, you know, the way to go. I don't know what that looks like, so I'm, you know, throwing it out there because I really don't know. If I were to get myself a whole list of CPT codes and prices, I don't know what that would do for me, because I don't want, you know, if I'm sick, I want to focus on getting well, and I do want to focus on the price. I understand that, and there are variations to that. I would want to know who's in network and who's not in network, but I would want someone to make it simpler for me. So to me, my wish list, if I was a patient, would be to say, you know, what are the three hospitals that my either physician that I've chosen or the area that I live in that I'm willing to go to, what are they going to cost me, and give me comparisons of that for my condition. That's what I would prefer to see versus what we're talking about here, because I just don't see how this is going to be very usable for an individual.
Okay, and thank you for that. That's a good, thoughtful comment. I think where we're trying to get to right now is purely unblocking the information that could go to where we've discussed, but also to where you just articulated as well. I think it's about, and what we're talking about is enabling that information to be unblocked versus necessarily the utility that it will be put to. Do we have any calls? Sorry, any comments coming from the public gallery?
Not at this time.
Okay, thank you. Okay, deep breath. It's been an hour and 45 minutes. I'm happy for us to close at this point, unless anyone's got anything burning they want to get off their chest. In terms of next steps, Cynthia, can you take that first pass on the potential update to EHI?
Yes, I will. And why don't we do this? Why don't we just, is there some way we can get each other's emails, or maybe we're all on it, or phone numbers, if we want to just like bounce off of each other as we're looking at that before our next call, just if that's possible?
Absolutely. Actually, Lauren, can you send an email quickly just to all the members of the task force, please, just so we all know each other's coordinates?
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you very much, ma'am.
Another feedback is I printed out the now enabled URL, I printed it out, but the red line doesn't show up red on my printer, even though I have a color printer. So I don't know why, but I just wanted to give, I don't know if it's the
same problem. So beyond the ink,
I get blue
right
and
now.
Black, but I have red band in that. So.
Okay, I'm assuming the ink has not run out. I'll flip you just the Word copy that's in Word that should be a lot more straightforward to print out with all the markup on.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. No worries. Well, once I get the email from Lauren, because then I've got your email address. Okay. Anybody else got anything else they'd like to bring to the table at this juncture? Okay. Thank you. This has been a very, very good conversation. I'm one of the most topical, most difficult discussions that I've certainly seen coming out of HITACH or its forebears for a long time. So thank you ever so much.
Well, thank you, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Everyone. Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Meeting adjourned.